Any time that you care to reserve for rebuttal?
Maybe 3 minutes, please.
Yes, sir.
It's morning or afternoon, but good afternoon. Scott Crowley for the appellant, Sundar Singh Bala. Here we have an administrative review of an agency decision under the Virginia Administrative Procedures Act. Appellant Mr. Bala appeals the decision of VRS, the Virginia Employment System, which ruled that by unretiring, meaning returning to state government employee after serving over 25 years as a state employee, he forfeited 6 years of credited service that was awarded to him following an involuntary layoff from the Virginia Department of Conservation and Recreation. And that was awarded pursuant to the Virginia
Workforce Transition Act.
Thank you, yes, Judge. And I'm arguing that the agency's decision should be reversed on two grounds. One's a legal matter, is a matter of law, because the notice of forfeiture, which is contained in the retirement certificate, was inadequate, and it did not meet the agency's duties under the Virginia Human Resources Policies and Procedures Manual, Section 101, which is right in the introduction, that says that that agencies have a responsibility, quote, to ensure that employees have access to policies and information. Second, I'm arguing that there was not a factual argument, but there was not substantial evidence to support the decision on three basic grounds. One is the defective notice. Two, that the retirement system in a paper that's in the record that is addressed to retirees says if you ever have any questions about your retirement or anything, feel free to call our customer service hotline, which he did. He did it twice. The first one's not recorded. According to my client, he was told there was not an issue. The second one is literally the morning before that he was supposed to take the new employment, and there's the transcript, and I've quoted it, and Mr. Bala asked if he would lose his service by or have any reduction in his pension. Should he take this new job? And he was told no. Third, the fact finder and the agency head relied on hearsay. There was a statement that they had reached out to his old department, Department of Conservation and Recreation, and were told that he was informed that he would forfeit his 6 years of credited service if he ever became reemployed with the state. He denies that. And then the fact finder relied on that, which, in my view, makes that a double hearsay. So that evidence can't be relied on. So as far as my argument is substantial evidence, I mean, that peg just comes away. I've brought with me copies of the certificate, if you want me to pass them up, because that's so central to my argument. It's only 2 pages. Can I do that, or be...
That would be fine. It's a part of the record, so...
It's a part of the record, but I know the record's an inch thick, but...
To kind of focus in on that point a little bit, we know that the retirement certificate states the total, when it gets to the point you want to speak about, the total Workforce Transition Act, WTA, credit added to your age and or service was 6 years. In the calculation of your benefit, 0 years, 0 months were added to your age, and 6 years, 0 months were added to your service. And here comes the particularly important part. If you return to work in any VRS-covered position, you will forfeit your WTA credit. When you retire again, the WTA credit will not be used in the calculation of your VRS benefit. You must retire under the same option selected in your initial retirement.
Correct.
Tell us what's inadequate about that.
Taken in isolation is not inadequate. In fact, the fact finder said I can't imagine a more clear statement of the law. My argument is it's buried. It's under a section called taxation of benefits. If a devious person had a duty to disclose something but didn't really want to disclose it, they would bury it, like this is buried. Now, I'm not saying anybody from VRS did it deceivously, but the effect is the same.
The effect's only the same if you don't read what you're given that pertains to your retirement, isn't it? I mean, he's charged with reading whatever may be pertinent to his retirement, isn't he?
He's charged, well...
I mean, if you fail to read something, I guess stated a different way, if you fail to read something, that's potentially to your own detriment, is it not?
Well, that's certainly VRS's argument. My view is that the agency has a duty by the regulation to make the policies accessible, and when you bury it under a section, that statement of forfeiture of creditable services has nothing to do with taxation of benefits, and yet here it is under taxation of benefits. So if someone's reading this, they're going to say, well, I don't see anything here. Now, yes.
But you might have a good argument if the other piece didn't exist. But
which
you've
is
got
the other piece?
The language that Judge Attlee provided. I mean, isn't that pretty clear?
Again, if it's highlighted, it's very clear. But it's not highlighted. It's buried in here. I mean, it's like someone looking up a topic in the encyclopedia and it's under the wrong letter without any notice. I mean, here it's in a section that's not intended to inform the recipient of this problem. I mean, why isn't there a subheading that said re-employment following, you know, unretiring or re-employment following retiring? Or it could have had a section that said, you know, notice you may forfeit your benefits. It doesn't say that. I mean, this is such a densely worded document. I mean, people don't just normally read things unless there is an intention to find a topic. And if, so if someone's scanning this, trying to find a topic, there's nothing here that puts my client on notice of the law. So I mean,
how does that coexist with your second argument, or part of your second argument? That is to say that what they gave him wasn't sufficient to put him on notice that he may lose the benefit that he gets through the WTA, but then argue that he also relied upon VRS when he calls before beginning his new employment to make sure that nothing he got was going to go away. How do those two coexist? I don't know, but even though I don't know, is anything I got going to go away? How do you harmonize those?
Oh, are you supposed that maybe he was clued in that he might lose it, and that's why?
Why else would you call to make sure that you're not going to lose anything?
Well, if you read the transcript of his call, he wasn't calling specifically about the 6 years of WTA credit. He was just calling, what's the effect of my reemployment on my retiring?
And so if there's no mention of the WTA credit, how then do you rely upon that telephone call to say that, well, they told him he wasn't going to lose anything, even though he didn't ask the question that's particularly pertinent, that is the WTA credit. How do you say that they steered him wrong in the telephone call if he didn't ask the right question?
He didn't ask the right question, but he said, so I won't lose anything. I think that's a almost verbatim paraphrase of the transcript. He said, so if I go back to work, I won't lose anything, right? And the answer was, well, you won't get retirement during, you know, your reemployment, but once you retire again, then your retirement will pick up. And he asked, will I lose anything? Meaning, will my benefits be decreased for any reason? The answer was no. So, I mean, I think he exercised his due diligence to try to find out.
And why do you call to find out if you're going to lose anything if you didn't think you got anything special to begin with?
You can lose something besides the 6 years. I mean, maybe he could have lost something else. Maybe he could have lost...
Like what?
I don't know, but...
Well, that's part of the issue for the fact finder, isn't it, in determining whether it believes your client or not? The hearing officer had to determine whether your client was believable in saying that I didn't know this to begin with, and then the call I made wasn't a setup phone call. It was just me making sure that I didn't, in fact, lose what I didn't know I had to begin with.
I mean, my client would have had to have been a daredevil to know that he would lose his 6 years if he actually read this and understood it, and then rely on the someone at the VRS to tell him otherwise. I mean, if he was aware, if he'd read this and understood it and said, "Oh my gosh, I'm going to lose those 6 years," I mean, that would have been reckless to then call VRS and pose the question in such a way that the customer service said, no, you won't lose it, and then he could rely on that. I mean, there's nothing in the record that would suggest some sort of devious intent like that. My client's been adamant. I mean, what prompted this whole case is when he retired the second time, got another certificate very similar to that, and all of a sudden he sees that, wait a second, I'm getting $400 less per month than I expected in my credited years you know, I've lost the 6 years. I mean, and then he right away, on his own, pro se, contacted VRS and appealed it. With all due respect, I don't see anything in the record that would suppose that. And I don't think he's been accused of that by the fact finder. I think the fact finder message was, well, this notice was adequate. So you should have known. It's essentially a should have known argument. And my position, as you're well aware of, is that this is not adequate. But I don't think there's any view here that he really did know.
So how do we get beyond the fact finder's finding that it was, in fact, adequate?
Well, I think as a matter of law, you can look at it de novo, that this is adequate or not. And secondarily, and that's my chief argument, I'll concede. My secondary argument is that the substantial evidence rule. And I know that's a harder argument. But, you know, combined with he did what he was supposed to, calling the VRS customer service and being given, you know, a clear path. The agency head and the fact finder relying on this hearsay, this idea that we reached out, I'm paraphrasing the director, we reached out to your department and learned that you were told. No indication who they talked to, how they were told, no ability to cross-examine. I was surprised that the fact finder even relied on that, because obviously the fact finder hadn't gone beyond the agency decision to find out who may have given this information so we could dispute it. The fact finder is very clear that my client disputes ever having been told from his agency that he would lose these 6 years. So it's just double hearsay. I mean, it just can't be relied upon as evidence for substantial evidence, you know, justification for the decision. Yeah, I mean, that's essentially my argument. I'm going to start repeating myself unless you have any questions.
Well, and you're perfect with your rebuttal time that you've okay. asked to a lot.
Thank you.
So if you'd like to reserve the rest of it.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon to the court. May it please the court. My name is Brian Goodman. I represent the Virginia Retirement System in this case. And I think it may help to run through and give you the anatomy of a Workforce Transition Act retirement. In this case, the Workforce Transition Act, Chapter 32 of Title 2.2, is administered by the Department of Human Resource Management. It's for lack of a better phrase, a soft landing for involuntarily separated state employees. Section 3202 gives the eligibility for the benefit. Section 3203 describes the severance benefit, which would normally be a cash payment. 3204 describes the enhanced retirement benefit, and the section starts out saying in lieu of the cash payment in 3203, that the person can elect to have that cash payment converted to service for an enhanced retirement. Think of it along the way of it's a cash payment that's spread out over a person's retirement by virtue of having a higher retirement benefit. So when a person decides to take the enhanced retirement benefit under the Workforce Transition Act, VRS receives a Form 11. I'm getting way in the weeds, but page 35 of the appendix shows the form that we get. All we're told at that point is this is a WTA retirement. Add 6 years to this person's service for the purposes of calculation. At that point, we do put a notice on the certificate, but when we put that notice on there, we're merely telling the retiree again what the existing DHRM policy is. And for that reason, I would say that the DHRM's policy 1.57, which I talk about in my brief, really decides the case. It's been unchanged since 2002. The language is clear in there.
What's your response to counsel's point about it being buried?
Well, it's not buried. I would preface my remark by saying that we're not the person's employer, but we added that language when there was a WTA retirement, and so it was just another note in there to kind of say, you know, if the world was perfect, maybe it would say DHRM policy 1.57 says that if you return to work, then you're going to lose this service. But unfortunately, it didn't. I don't think it's buried. I think what happens in the retirement process is that a person gets a form beforehand where they have to sign off whichever option they're going to get. And when they turn that in, they then receive a retirement certificate, and that's the one in granite.
So your position is that policy is just icing on the cake in terms of notification, that the real notification is the certificate and the fact that the employee has signed off on
right.
The option.
When they get the certificate to which counsel referred to, that language in there, at that point, it doesn't negate the existing DHRM policy, because if you read that in there, I'm at page 111 and 112 of the appendix, the frequently asked questions about severance benefits, you know, what if I accept another job? And it explains in there, if you take another job while you're taking the cash benefits, those payments stop because you're back. And then the very next paragraph in that question, if an employee who used the enhanced retirement benefit returns to a position covered by VRS, FORS, or VALORS, he is no longer retired, and all retirement benefits stop. If this employee works for some time and again retires, the enhanced retirement benefit will not be applied in another retirement. That's been out there unchanged since at least 2002, WTA came in 1995. So, and frankly, I don't know that the onus is on the Virginia retirement system to warn people about the policy of the Division of the Department of Human Resource Management. But we did put it in the certificate, and I think that virtually every retiree who takes an enhanced retirement benefit under the Workforce Transition Act is on notice by virtue of DHRM's policy, and then to use your analogy, our notice there is icing on the cake.
And it's so, in the frequently asked questions on the VRS's website too, isn't it? Which is,
yes.
I think, a printout of that is part of the appendix.
Yeah, there are some in there, and we
under severance benefits, I believe DHRM severance benefits.
Yes, and so there's opportunities for this information to be received, and so the language is clear in the DHRM policy. We're basically reminding our retirees of that when they go out on WTA. And I just want to take one moment and address the double hearsay issue that was brought up. I didn't have this in my brief. I hadn't found it, but anyway, I found a case that talks about this, and it's this court in Williams versus Commonwealth, 57 Virginia App, 108, discussed the issue about an administrative setting, and I say, basically, however, the rules of evidence are relaxed in an administrative proceeding, and the findings will not be reversed solely because the presiding member considered evidence not in the record. Pertinent is a quote from Virginia Real Estate Commission versus Bias, which is an Administrative Process Act classic case, which is quoted in my brief a lot. But it says, no reversible error will be found unless there is a clear showing of prejudice arising from the omission of such evidence, or unless it is plain that the agency's conclusions were determined by the improper evidence and that a contrary result would have been reached in its absence. Don't believe that mention of another employer reaches that level, and I would ask the court to reject that argument. Unless there are other questions by the court, I would ask that please affirm the circuit court in upholding the VRS case decision as one that rests on substantial evidence and contains no error of law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goodall. Mr. Crowley?
Yes. Sure.
You've got 3 minutes and I think a bonus 6 seconds.
Okay, I'm going to use it wisely.
Just briefly, if I could turn to, and I didn't talk the first time about the frequently asked questions. It's on page 112 of the the appendix.
Yes, sir. I believe in the paragraph you're talking about, or the question you're talking about, is number 8 that starts on 111,
right,
and then the pertinent language is on 112.
It's the second paragraph of that answer, and it says, if an employee uses the enhanced retirement benefit, and part of my argument was this is a, when you look at question number 1, they talk about transitional severance benefits, and if you read the statute, they talk about transitional severance benefits. And in this here, and then by 8, they're not talking about transitional severance benefits. They're talking about enhanced retirement benefit, which you, when you read it with knowledge, you learn that the enhanced retirement benefit is a subset of transitional severance benefits, but it's not clear to a layman. And then when it says...
In frequently asked question number 3, that's when it begins saying, what is the enhanced retirement option? Is that correct?
Right.
And then they follow from there.
Right. But the language of the statute tracks the transitional severance benefits. It doesn't use the other one. But then when it, going back to 8, when it says, if this employee works for some time and again retires, the enhanced retirement benefit will not be applied to another retirement. That's not clear. It's not clear to me, the trained lawyer. It's not clear to a layman. What does it mean it will not be applied to another retirement? I mean, it could mean that there's one set of retirement for your first service, your first 25 years, and then for your, I think he worked for a year. His second year, that's a separate retirement. When you unpack it, it doesn't specifically say in there, you're going to lose your WTA.
Except that I don't think you can read that in isolation without reading the sentence before it, which says, if an employee who used the enhanced retirement benefit returns to a position covered by VRS, SPORs, or VALORS, he or she is no longer retired, and
right,
all retirement benefits stop.
Right.
So when you talk about another retirement, they're officially not retired any longer if they go back to work for an entity that is covered by VRS.
With all due respect, when it says all retirement benefits stop, what that means is during the term of your reemployment, your pension will stop.
Because you're no longer considered retired.
Correct. I don't think you could read that as meaning that's a forfeiture of your WTA 6 years of credit. That's my argument.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Maybe I have one more thing. Just to the point that the double hearsay was essentially harmless. I mean, the fact finder noted it on page 21 of the appendix and basically repeats exactly what the agency had said. I mean, he put it in there for a reason. He was basically saying, you know, lest there's any doubt for my decision, you know, this. I mean, why put it in there if it was somehow harmless? I mean, he put it in there for a reason. He relied on it. And I just don't think there's an evidentiary basis for relying on it. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. We'll come down to Greek Council and then take just a brief